Romans chapter 3, starting verse 1. Romans chapter 3, verse 1. I guess today, the day and age we live in, you're supposed to give people what they call trigger warnings. Now, does everybody know what a trigger warning is? Like, this might hurt your feelings, or you might find this offensive. I'm supposed to warn you ahead of time. And so I'll just tell you, I'll say some things that'll be, you know, perceived as politically incorrect. But I'll just tell you, if you pay attention, I think I'll just straight up just present you with facts. I'm not really giving my opinion on them. I don't know why presenting you with the facts is politically incorrect. But the day and age we live in, I think presenting you with the facts and more of the facts is politically incorrect. So that's, but anyways, I just give you that warning. If you're going to be offended, hit your feelings hurt, I don't know. So be it. I don't think your feelings will get hurt, but I think today, neighbor, I'm supposed to warn you. Romans 3, verse 1, did I already say that? Yep. It says, what advantage then hath the Jew, or what profit is there of circumcision, much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God? For if some did not believe, shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? God forbid. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written, that thou mightest be justified in thy sayings, and mightest overcome when thou art judged. Now what I want is a part in verse 4. I like verse 4 a lot. He says, God forbid. You know, if they don't believe, what does that do to does that make the word of God none effect? No. God forbid. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written. And then he goes on, that thou mightest be justified in thy sayings, and mightest overcome when thou art judged. I harp on verse 4, and I don't know if harp is the word, but I mention verse 4 a lot. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. I mention that. You know, my kids will tell you, oh, we've heard the old man say that how many times? You know, we talk about history, we talk about science, we talk about politics, we talk about a lot of stuff, and I'll tell them, yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. So if some don't believe the Bible, there he says, what if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? God forbid. It doesn't matter what you think about it. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. So like I tell you, we talk about history, and I'll tell them, some stuff people say is not true. Some people lie to you on purpose. They mean to deceive you. Some people just don't know better. It's a good thing for you. You have the Bible. We're hoping you learn it so that you know what's true. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. If you have some book, or a TV show, or a teacher, or a loved one, or a magazine, something goes contrary to what God says in this Bible, you know it's false. I'm not saying the guy means to be lying to you. He might be. There's a lot of well-intentioned idiots in the world. But it's good for you to know what the truth is. And how do you know what the truth is? By going and looking and seeing what God says. And that's what he says. Yea, God forbid. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. As it is written, right? So you go and you look and see what's written. Whatever you say, whatever else I might read, whatever I hear on the TV, I judge it by this. If God says something and somebody says something else, I know he's wrong. Right? And I think you get that. I've mentioned it here over and over. I mentioned it at the house over and over. If something's contrary to what it says in this book, it's not true. Period. And just one case in point, you go to school, you read books, whatever. The idea nowadays is that, you know, man, this is what the scholars and academics believe and what they teach. Man was originally polytheistic, meaning your ancestors were cavemen. Every caveman in the world had 50 gods. And then man kind of developed monotheism, right? That's the prevailing theory today. You know what it says in just a few pages back? This is just one case in point. Romans 1 verse 21, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God, singular. And then he goes on, into the image made like the corruptible man and the birds and the four-footed beasts and creepy things. That's a lie. Man was not originally polytheistic and then became monotheistic. Man was originally monotheistic and devolved, degenerated into polytheism. At one time, all the people on earth knew God. You know, we just talked about this morning. At one time, there were only 8 people here. They all knew God. They went their separate ways, and they decided, we don't want God. We want these other corruptible gods. You know, that's what goes. And I'll just tell you this, by the way. And when they knew God, they glorified him not. It has nothing to do with Allah. It's just the one true God of this Bible. Everybody on the planet knew him, and they just decided we don't like him. That's just one case in point. And I just mentioned it because we're close. It's a page and a half away from where we're at. It's, yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. So I know this. The anthropologists, archaeologists, whatever they are, say, at one time, everybody was polytheistic, and they became monotheistic. It's a lie. How do I know? Well, because I just looked it up, and I told you what it said right here. As it is written. I just told you what it's written. Everybody at one time knew God. You know, that, like I said, that's just one example. And the world, you know, the case, you know, I show it to you, just one example, just to illustrate, the world is just full of unbiblical ideas and unbiblical beliefs. And when I say that, the world's full of unbiblical ideas and beliefs, what that means is this world is full of lies. And like I said, not everybody means to be lying, but they're still propagating lies. You know, I'll just tell you this year, or I guess it was 2016, you know, all these big dictionaries come out with a word of the year. Like, you know, I don't even know what they are most years, but, you know, I usually hear it and don't pay much attention to it. Well, this year, does everybody know Oxford Dictionary's word of the year? Well, you're laughing out, maybe you heard it. The word for the year from Oxford Dictionary is post-truth. That's the word for 2016. Post-truth is an adjective. It describes, like, for instance, a post-truth society, where you live in a post-truth country or culture, whatever it might be. But it's an adjective that describes circumstances in which objective facts are less important in shaping opinion than appeals to emotion. That's the word for year from the Oxford Dictionary. This is 2016. I'm like, what? 2016? You've just now got that figured out in 2016. How many years have I been standing up here saying a typical American does not want to be confused with the facts? You've all heard me say it before. I've been saying it for years and years here now. And the geniuses, and I put in quote, the geniuses at Oxford are just now getting with it, huh? And it kind of makes me feel good to think, you know what, I am more on the ball than the scholars and geniuses at Oxford. But of course I'm more on the ball than the scholars at Oxford. What does the Bible say? What's Psalm 119, 130? What does he tell you? He says, the entrance of thy words giveth light, it giveth understanding unto the simple. So of course I had it figured out before the idiots at Oxford had it figured out. I got the Bible, they don't. I just got this old, outdated book, and I've had that figured out, like I said, for years and years, and Oxford dictionaries just now catching on, saying we live in a post-truth culture. Nobody cares about the facts. They just want to know how it makes them feel. And so, you know, I think it's worth mentioning, because I think they're finally catching on. And so, the entrance of thy words giveth light, it giveth understanding unto the simple. If that's true, which it is, what is the absence and the exiting of God's word brings? Bring. If the words bring light and understanding, when they go, what are they left with? Darkness and misunderstanding. And I'll just tell you, man as a species is prone to lying and liars. I mean, your great-great-grandmother fell for the first lie that anybody ever told her. Everybody remember back in Genesis 3? The devil told her one lie, she fell for it. You know, I guess no big surprise. I mean, when you don't know any better, it's easy to trick somebody. That's why there's so much effort in lying to little kids. Because kids don't know better. You can tell them anything, they'll believe you. You know, but that's what's going on. I mean, and that's the stock you're cut from. The devil shows up, the serpent shows up, lies to your great-great-great-great-grandmother, and she's like, okay, sounds good to me. She fell for it. People are just prone to deception. Everybody reading the Bible, how many times have been warned about falling for deception? Be not deceived. How many times does the Bible say that? It says several times. Because you're prone to being deceived. You just can't help it. That's just man. Man is prone to lying and liars. They fall for it and they're getting worse all the time. We'll get to that here in a second. Look at John chapter 3. Look at verse 19. Here's a verse you know. Probably don't have to turn there, but we'll turn there anyways. Sit down.
John what?
Chapter 3, verse 19. All right, the entrance of thy word bringeth light. It giveth understanding unto the simple. And here you know this verse. And this is condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Right? Men love darkness rather than light. The entrance of thy word bringeth light, or giveth light, bringeth light, giveth understanding unto the simple. So the Bible comes in, it brings light. People love darkness rather than light. What does that lead the Bible? No wonder the Bible's illegal everywhere. You know, men love darkness rather than light, and this book brings light. They're all like cockroaches. No cockroaches like to hang out in the light. And they scatter. That's what's going on here. Men love darkness, and so thy word bringeth light, and so it drives out the darkness. And so, you know, I say all that. You know, loving darkness means hating the truth. Because the truth does bring light. It brings understanding. You know, a post-truth society or culture, whatever, which I think we are. Like I said, I've been saying for years, a typical American does not want you to show up and confuse them with the facts. They have their prejudices and their misbeliefs and, you know, feelings, and they'd rather have that than the truth and the facts. But Jesus says this, John 17:17, thy word is truth. A post-truth society is a post-Bible society, period. Men, you know, and you get it. Men love lies. Men are liars. And I think we've always lived in a, quote, post-truth society. I don't think it's... 2016 is, you know, Oxford is Johnny-come-lately. What do you mean 2016? That's the word. We've been that way. I think it's been a post-truth society since Eve sat down and started talking with the serpent. And it's only gotten worse. You know, case in point, what's 2 Timothy 3, verse 13 say? Evil men and seducers shall wax worse in what? Deceiving and being deceived. It's only getting worse. Men have always been deceiving and being deceived. They're just waxing worse and worse, getting worse and worse all the time. You know, that's where we're at. And I think men are becoming better at lying and are becoming more gullible because no wonder there's less truth. Right? And no wonder you fall for more lies. There's less truth around to kind of contradict the lies. A guy said one time, and I really like, you know the problem with the truth? It makes everything else look like a lie. You know, so you gotta get rid of the truth, because men love lies. They just do. And that's what I'll show you some things here today, just to kind of, just to illustrate, I guess, that just how much falsehood and lies that this world embraces and really is built on. Now I'll show you something. I'll show you how unscriptural most people are in their thinking. Look at Proverbs 25, look at verse 11. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 11. I know you know the verse. Read it. I think you know what I'm going to say about it already. Proverbs 25, verse 11. It says, a word fitly spoken. How many words is that? How many words is a word? It's one. So a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Right? It's a word is worth more than apples, plural, of gold in pictures, plural, of silver. Everybody get that? One word is worth more than all of them. And what do they say in the streets? What's everybody say in the street? What's the world's version of that verse? A picture's worth what? Every American knows that. A picture's worth a thousand words. Lie. Let God be true, but every man a liar. What does God say? A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. There is no picture worth a thousand words. You know, it's either, I mean, it's one or the other. Either God's true, or the Bible's true, or the guy in the street that says a picture's worth a thousand words is true. One of them's lying to you. And guess who it is? You know, we didn't read it, but you know, God is not a man that he should what? Lie. Neither the Son of Man that he should repent. God doesn't lie to you. When God wants to show you how honest he is, he says, I ain't like you people. You guys are liars. I ain't nothing like you. You know, God is not a man that he should lie. So if God says a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver, and every man on the planet says a picture is worth a thousand words, they're all lying to you. You know, but anyway, and like I said, you already knew the verse. You probably know where I was going with it. A picture's not worth a thousand words. I'll just say, by the way, if you read the Bible, you get this idea that God, that pictures really aren't that good. God doesn't have anything good to say about pictures in the Bible. You get the idea from the Bible that you really ought to be careful about pictures. I mean, we don't want all the verses, but you really ought to be leery about pictures, according to the Bible. Now, I'll show you this. Actually, I have visual aids, kind of something new, but this is a photograph from a guy named Roger Fenton, and this photograph is called The Valley of the Shadow of Death, and I told you about it before. That picture was taken in 1855, actually April 23rd, 1855. in Crimea, and it is regarded as the world's first example of photojournalism in war. Everybody knows there was a Crimean war. The guy took pictures of it, sent it back to wherever, I think in London, wherever he sent it to. And so this is regarded as the first, you know, war photograph. Like I said, April 23rd, 1855. And there's been this debate for years. Since 1855, it's debated whether this picture is real or not real. I know I've told you about it before. I kind of already spoiled the ending a long time ago. People say it's staged. People say, no, it's real. The guy showed up and people say, no, it's staged. No, it's real. No, it's staged. No, it's, you know, on and on. Since 1855. Now we got computers. People can use computers. And they can I don't know what they do with computers, but they measure light and shadow and angles and all this stuff with computers. Guess what? Now with computers, guess what? It's a fake. The thing is, it's staged. And you ought to get that. The very first example of photojournalism was a fake. Right? I mean, like I said, I don't know how they figure with computers, but everybody, now they can say, yeah, we put it in the software, measure this, measure that. The thing's a con job. The guy pulled the wool over everybody's eyes, you know, way back in 1855. And you get that. First time photojournalism is used in the world, it's a lie. It's a fraud. And you want to know what's happening now, you know, now the big thing is fake news. Man, the world's been full of fake news since Eve sat down and talked with the serpent. And you want to figure out what's going on now? Well, everybody knows the verse. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 9. The thing that hath been, is that which shall be, and that which is done, is that which shall be done, and there's no new thing under the sun. So since a guy invented a camera, a guy's been using a camera to tell you lies. Like I said, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, right? Now they just have more tools and more equipment to lie to you with than they used to have. And since 1855, there's been this debate. It's real, it's fake. It's real, it's fake. Well, now they know. Everybody knows now it's fake. But it doesn't end there. This is how nuts the world is, by the way. So everybody knows the thing's a con job. The whole thing's been staged. There's nothing at all real about it. I think even the dates are supposed to be wrong. But it doesn't end. This is considered the first piece of photo war correspondence, whatever you want to call it. But now they say this. Well, it's more real than if it was real because of the truth that it illustrates. I'm like, you think I'm a religious nut? That's nuts. This thing that's a lie, they say, is more real than if it was real. You know, because it shows you this truth. I'm like, there is no truth. It's a con job. But we like the way it makes us feel. I mean, it does. It inspires emotion. You know, who wants to be confused with the facts about something, you know, in 2016? Like I said, they call me a religious nut. And I'll show you this one, too. Oh, I had another copy of that, I guess. I'll show you this one because you've seen it before. But I should tell you this. I have books. I have magazines, you know, I watch TV shows, you know, documentary type stuff. And you always ought to be glad. You should be very thankful you have a Bible. Because let God be true, but there's one way I know if something's true or not. You know, you have five guys arguing, like I said, that, you know, one guy says this, one guy says that. What are you going to believe? Well, I believe one that lines up with what God says. And it's good. It's very good. You live in such a dishonest and crooked world. It's good to have something. So, you know, at least I know what's true. You know, it kind of helps me, you know, sort out the other stuff, figure out what's true and what's false. You know, I'll just tell you, I get really sick of the lies. I'll tell you, for a while, I was watching C-SPAN. I know it's been years ago now. I was just watching C-SPAN pretty regularly just because it's appalling how just dishonest these people are. I mean, they're so, I mean, just obviously just dishonest. I'd watch it just because I was like, man, I can't believe what a bad liar this guy is. You know, but anyways. But getting off track, I'll show you another picture. I know you've seen it before. You've probably seen it recently, you know, whether it be, you know, Martin Luther King Day is last week or the week before. Next month is, you know, Black History Month coming up. So if you haven't seen it soon, you've probably seen it again. But I'll show you this picture, and it's been propagated under belief that what does the world believe? The world believes that pictures are worth 1,000 words. And this picture, I should show it to you, I guess. It's taken by a guy named Bill Hudson on May 3rd, 1963. The picture's taken in Birmingham. And this is a 15-year-old kid. His name, I forget his name, Walter Goodson. And he's a 15-year-old sophomore, and he's bit by a dog in Birmingham, Alabama. You've seen the picture before. I'm sure you've seen the picture before. And that was May 3rd, 1963. The next day, that picture's on the front page of the New York Times. You know, New York Times is kind of a target, you know, kind of a, you know, one of the things in the false news thing now. 1963 was how many years ago? They've been in the false news business for years and years, by the way. And that's what we'll get to here in a second. Fake news is no new thing. You just read Ecclesiastes 1 verse 9. Talk about Crimea in 1855. You know, they've been doing false news for years and years. But the picture shocked people. People saw it on a newspaper and they were shocked. You know, the civil rights movement was kind of dead in the water. And that picture really got the civil rights movement kind of actually moving. That was in 1963. Kennedy was shot in 63. And I think really Kennedy dying had a lot to do with the civil rights legislation that happened. But the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964. And that picture is kind of a big deal about it. And I'll tell you what they don't tell you in the textbooks, in the magazines, and on the TV. In 1963, Martin Luther King came to Birmingham because his movement was in crisis. The civil rights movement was dead in the water. He spent 9 months in Albany, Georgia trying to stir up trouble and nothing happened. I mean, they're trying to agitate in Albany, Georgia, and the press is there. They're trying to agitate, trying to get things rolling, trying to provoke people, and nothing was happening in Albany, Georgia. So the press is there, you know, New York Times, all these people are there, nothing's happening. So everybody's losing interest. There's no pictures or nothing to put, nothing to report. Nothing's going on. You know, he's down there, they're trying to provoke an incident in Albany, Georgia, and the police chief there knew what was going on, and he wouldn't take the bait. His name was Pritchett, and he was very polite. He was very respectable. You know, I mean, he was just, you know, just that, polite, respectful, and he kind of had figured out what they're trying to do there. Like I said, and he wouldn't take the bait. So they spend 9 months there, nothing's happening. There's no news to report. So they go to Birmingham, and the chief's name in Birmingham was Eugene Conner. Everybody know the name Eugene Conner? What does everybody know him as? Bull Conner. What do you think kind of temperament a guy like Bull Conner has? I mean, he's probably not the nice and respectable guy that, you know, Pritchett was in Albany. As a matter of fact, Pritchett goes to Birmingham. They pack up because nothing happens in Albany. And Pritchett went to Birmingham to say, let me tell you what they're going to try to do. They're trying to provoke an incident here. And he said he kind of had to figure out what was going on. He walked into Bull Conner's office, a little short guy with a big voice. And he's sitting in one of the big chairs, you know, kind of like Darth Vader or something. And he turns his chair around to bait, and he kind of gave him the riot act, like, you know, I'm the big bull of the woods here kind of type of deal. And he's like, oh. They picked the right place. And that Pritchett had figured out. They came to the right place to start trouble. Because this guy, he is going to take the bait. You know, he's a short man, but he's short-tempered. He's hot-headed. He was a drunk. Bull Conner spent the mornings in a downtown hotel doing shots of 100-proof old granddad bourbon. That's how he spent his mornings. You know, so they're going to, you know, try to start a fight with somebody, and he's kind of a good guy to go and start a fight with. And they went there on purpose to provoke a guy that's a hothead. And like I said, that Pritchett goes warn him, you know, and he's, you know, and you get it. And so King's man in Birmingham, most of 1963, Martin Luther King was in Atlanta. His man in Birmingham is a guy named Wyatt Walker. And I put in quotes, a Baptist minister from Massachusetts. You know, and he's known as a troublemaker. And you can read his own words if you wanted to, go find him yourself. He talks about how fluid his morality is, because he's a good Baptist preacher. You know, if I need to be one way one day, you know, I don't think that's really morality if it's, quote, fluid, you know, but anyways, you know, this Baptist preacher from Massachusetts, or minister, I don't think he uses the word preacher, Wyatt Walker, he was a member of the Young Communist League. So when I tell you he's a communist, that's not my opinion. The guy was a genuine communist. He joined the Young Communist League. And then, you know, but he'll tell you, again, not my opinion, just telling you the facts. He said he joined the Young Communist League because that was the only way a black boy can meet white girls. You know, but anyways, you can do that what you want. And he wrote a paper about establishing a 5-year plan for a Soviet-style economy in the United States. And you know, the civil rights movement's all about peace, right? That's what you've been told. I'll just tell you, this Wyatt Walker, he had all these elaborate plans for assassinating segregationists. You know what a segregationist is, by the way? A guy that says, I want to be able to hang out with who I want to hang out with. I don't want you to force somebody else on me. I mean, you know, but anyways, that was his plan. And like I said, I know you've been told it's peaceful, but it wasn't. He had these assassination plans. He lost a fight to a white guy on a courthouse in North Carolina. And he said if he'd had his razor, he'd have cut him. Real peaceful guy. And he got beat up, but he'd have won if he had his razor blade, you know. And so, long story short, they wasted 9 months trying to provoke an incident in Albany. They go to Birmingham, and they knew they needed something to happen in Birmingham because it would have been the end of the movement. I mean, the civil rights movement would have just been dead. That would have been it. And so Walker said, here's his quote, that he went to Birmingham to, quote, ride the bull, you know, to agitate. That's his, not my opinion. I'm just telling you what the guy said. And so he instituted in Birmingham called Project C. And the C stood for confrontation. So they're going to have sit-ins. That was part one, phase one. Then they're going to have boycotts, phase two. And phase three, you know, it's all about escalation. Phase three was going to be marches, you know, demonstrations in the seat. But nothing's happening. Nobody cared about what they're doing in Birmingham. Yeah, so what? We're not going to go to your restaurant. So what? We don't care. We're not going to ride the bus. So what? We don't care. We're going to have marches. Guess what? Nobody cared. You know why nobody cared? Has these marches with like seven people showing up. Here's the big civil rights movement in Birmingham. Seven guys. And then next day they'd have a march with nine guys. Then they'd have, you know, that's how it was going. And everybody's losing, you know, nobody cares. The press is losing interest. And then the other thing is, none of the black people in Birmingham wanted to be associated with any of them. Because they all had, you know, most of their bosses were white. Nobody wanted to lose their job. That's why only seven guys are showing up for a march. Because, you know, they're marching in the middle of the day. And, you know, there used to be time in America when there were black families. A black mom, a black dad. The black dad went to work, took care of his kids. That used to be what life in America used to be, right? You know, prior to the Civil Rights Act and all this other nonsense that happened. But they didn't want to lose their job. The local black paper called Project C, and this is a quote, wasteful and worthless. That's the black paper talking about the Civil Rights Movement in Birmingham, Alabama. Wasteful and worthless. Photographers and the newspapers, they're there for this big confrontation. Nothing's happening. So guess what? Nothing's happening. Well, we'll go somewhere else and take pictures and report stories there. They're all ready to leave. And then Palm Sunday, 1963, they had 22 demonstrators in church. They're supposed to leave the church, and they're going to march at 2:30 in the afternoon. 2:30 rolls around. It seems kind of unclear, but it keeps getting like delayed. So 2:30 went to 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock went to 3:30. 3 o'clock goes, you know, that's what's going on. I don't think nobody started until 4:30. And so people showed up. Like, oh, there's going to be this march. You know, I don't even say big march. But 2:30, nobody's there. So 3 o'clock, people are kind of like, oh, there's supposed to be a march here. So people are lining up out front of the church just to watch a demonstration. You know, the expression is, nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. So it gets delayed longer and longer. And then more and more people are there to not participate, just to watch. And so the newspapers the next day, there's 22 marchers. The newspapers the next day report there's 1,100 marchers. There wasn't. There's 22 marchers, 1,100 or 1,000 people just standing there watching to see what's going to happen. Guess what happened? Nothing happened. Nothing all happened, but this Wyatt Walker, you know, the troublemaking Baptist preacher, and that, again, that's not my, that's what he's remembered as, being a troublemaker. He was inspired. So he has this idea, and he calls Martin Luther King, who's in Atlanta, and he says, boy, nothing happened today, but I got an idea. And he says, I can't tell you over the phone, because the FBI is kind of watching them all. So the FBI says, uh-oh, they got a plan. So the FBI tells this Bull Connor, I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing something. This guy's got something in mind that he wants to do. So a few weeks later, there's this guy named James Bevel, and he's working with all these kids. And so he gives these little black kids in town, he gives them these flyers that says, come to the 16th Street Church on Thursday at 12 o'clock. What are most kids supposed to do with Thursday at 12 o'clock? They're supposed to be in school. So he's telling all the kids, you know, this is a church, by the way. You know, I put in a church. So he gives them these brochures, tells all these kids, 12 o'clock on Thursday, leave school and come hang out at the church. Don't tell your parents and don't ask for permission. And then in the meantime, so he's giving them these pamphlets. We're all having this big party at the church. And then this other guy, his name is Shelley the Playboy Stewart, was a popular radio DJ, you know, for a black radio program. All the black kids listen to Shelley the Playboy Stewart. And he says, hey, kids, there's going to be a party at the park tomorrow. 12 o'clock, we're having this party in the park. There's all these kids. No one's showing up for civil rights, but Shelley the Playboy, the good time DJ, is telling them, we're having a party. Come to the party. And so Bull Connor says, hey, all you kids, you stay in school. And all the kids, they leave school, or a thousand of them leave school, not all of them. They come to the park. The kids who went to the church leave the church. They go to the park, and everybody's there for like a good time rock and roll party. And a bunch of them get arrested, and they wanted them to get arrested. A bunch of these kids got arrested for truancy, and so they're all in the jails, and now the jails are full. So the next day, they called it D-Day, by the way. Everybody, what was D-Day historically? Well, you invaded the beaches, right? And that's they called it D-Day. The next day was double D-Day. So Shelley, the Playboy steward, says, hey, all you kids, come to the park. You know, we're having a bigger party. So all these kids, they skip school. Even more kids skip school. They go to the park, and now the jails are full. Nobody can be arrested. And then they say, we're taking this party to City Hall. And Bull Connor says, you know, this is, again, just quoting, the niggers ain't coming to City Hall. So they set up these barricades to say, nobody's coming to the City Hall. Stay in the park, stay in your church, we don't need you on City Hall. Again, who was there for their civil rights? Nobody. There's a bunch of kids there for, because Shelley the Playboy says, hey, we're going to rock and roll and have a good time in the park on Friday. And so they say, we're moving this party, we're moving it to City Hall. And then, and here, well, that picture, we'll get to here in a second, I guess. They're not going to City Hall. And then this kid, Bull Connor's mad. You know, they had the barricade set up. They had this canine unit and stuff. And he goes out and he looks, and he's mad that, like, one of the dog's name was Tiger. Tiger's kind of this old, you know, this kind of old police dog. That dog's name is not Connor. I think I'll tell you in a second when I remember what his name is. But he's mad. How come the old dog? What do you got all the old dogs here for? We want the mean, you know, vicious dogs, and they weren't. And so this dog, it bit a kid. I mean, nobody's being attacked. The dog just bites a kid. You know, because, you know, things just, you know, they happen. You know, kid was bit by a dog. And then King and this Wyatt Walker, they're ecstatic about it. And they say, oh, we finally got a movement. Because a kid was bit by a dog, and someone's got a picture of it. I mean, the whole thing is just a kid got bit by a dog that was, he wasn't even there. He wasn't there to party. He wasn't there to protest. He's just a kid there just watching. And the judge, by the way, that was processing all these arrests, and he said, it's despicable that these people misled these kids and they should all be in jail. You know, you got all these kids out there, you know, and you lied to them. You used them. And then Times scolded the movement for using children as what they called shock troops. Robert Kennedy said it was disgraceful using kids in street demonstrations. He says an injured, maimed, or dead child is a price that none of us can afford to pay. And Malcolm X, I told Terry yesterday, one more reason I don't like Martin Luther King is now I have to say, well, I agree with Malcolm X. But Malcolm X said, real men don't put children in the firing line. And then another reason, you know, but anyways. And Martin Luther King, by the way, he was okay with using kids as little as 6 years old. Because he said, well, you can join the Baptist church when you're six, so you might as well be able to go out and, you know, protest and march in the streets when you're six. 2 years later, as a side note, you know, everybody remembers Selma, Alabama, right? Yeah. 2 years later in Selma, a photographer was helping some kid, and Martin Luther King, it, like, scolds this photographer for helping this kid and saying, you should be taking his picture. Don't help the kid. I don't care about the kid. Take a picture of it, though. You know, this kind of stuff that, you know, that shocks people. And then, but the kid in the picture, by the way, kind of got off track. Did I ever tell you his name is Walter Gadsden? Did I tell you that? He's a sophomore. He's just there watching people. That's all he's doing is watching people. His family owned two conservative newspapers that were very critical of Martin Luther King and the whole movement. The kid's not a civil rights demonstrator. And then the papers reported, by the way, that here's this kid. He's just like black Jesus. He just kind of gives himself to the dog to be kind of, you know, to the slaughter. That's not even true. If you look at the picture, you see the cop is pulling the dog back. You see the leash is taut. And the kid that supposedly, the story is he just kind of gives himself like black Jesus to the dog. The kid's kneeing the dog in the face in the picture, by the way. The dog's name is Leo. Leo's an old dog, and the kid broke the dog's jaw. So what happened in real life and what, you know, how it was reported, one has nothing to do with the other. And the whole thing being is, it was just an accident. I mean, and, you know, nobody believes that. It's just this big lie that everybody in America is supposed to believe and accept. And years later, Wyatt Walker said, he said, I'm sure, this is a quote, I'm sure people got bit by dogs, you know, at least two or three. But he says, but a picture's worth a thousand words. As the man said, they wanted pictures. Like I said, Martin Luther King scolds a photographer for helping a kid when he could have took a picture of a kid, you know, falling down and bleeding all his other stuff. And I'll show you these, because I got, you've seen these too. They're awful. Yeah, everybody see it? Yeah, he does. He broke the dog's jaw. Everybody seen these before? I mean, these are awful. I mean, it's all these little black kids getting hosed with fire hoses, right? I mean, it's terrible. And I'll tell you what Wyatt Walker said about the picture. I'm going to quote you from the horse's mouth. Wyatt Walker himself said those fire hose pictures are just like the dog pictures. He said it's very similar to the Gadsden photograph. What he says is about the people in the photographs, he said they were spectators like Gadsden, not demonstrators. And they had been standing outside 16th Street Baptist Church all afternoon on a typically humid Birmingham spring day. They were hot. This is quotes. They had gathered from Wyatt Walker, the instigator of the whole deal. They had gathered in the park, which is a shaded area, and the firemen had set up their hoses at two corners of the park, one on 5th Street and one on 6th Street, and the mood was like a Roman holiday. It was festive. There wasn't anybody amongst the spectators who were angry, and they had waited so long, and it was beginning to get dark now. So somebody heaved a brick because they knew that, in fact, they had been saying, turn the water hoses on, turn the water hoses on, and Bull Connor. Then somebody threw a brick, and he started turning them on, see? So they just danced and played in the hose spray. This famous picture of them holding hands, it was just a frolic of them trying to stand up. And some of them were getting knocked down by the hose. They'd get up and run back, and they would slide along the pavement, and they begin bringing up the fire hoses from the other corner. And instead of running away, they ran to the hoses. It was a holiday for them. And this went on for a couple hours. It was a joke, really. All in good humor and good spirit. Not any vitriolic response on the part of even the Negro spectators, which to me, again, was an example of the changing spirit. You know, when Negroes once had been cowed in the presence of policemen and maybe water hoses, they had a complete disdain for them and made a joke of it. That's a quote from the guy that instigated the whole deal. This is a Roman holiday for him. The kids, they're like slip and slide in the street in the fire hose. I mean, that's not my opinion. I'm telling you what the guy that instigated the whole deal, what he says about it. You know, I say all that. They're going to show these pictures. They probably did last week. Or was Martin Luther 2 weeks ago? They probably showed them. They're probably going to show them next month for Black History Month. And it's all a lie. And they just expect you to say, you know, you ought to believe this. I mean.
So really, they're not being attacked at all by water hoses. They're just out there.
No, they're playing. They're like slipping. From his description. From his, remember, yeah, you have a slip and slide when you're a kid?
Yeah. Well,
when he describes it, I think of it as a slip and slide. They get slide, they get hit by the hose, it slides them back, they run up and they slide back again. And I said, just, like I said, just to show you how just full of lies the world we live in is. And it's probably not the most spiritual message, you know, today, but as, like I said, I just want to show you that this world, for the most part, is just built on lies. And I'll show you something though. I will show you this. Look at John chapter 8. Actually, look at two places. John chapter 8 and Ephesians chapter 2. John chapter 8 verse 44 and Ephesians 2 verse 2. He says in John 8:44, here's some pages yet. He says, you have your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. So the devil's a murderer, and what else? He's a murderer and a liar. Now look at Ephesians 2 verse 2, where in times past, remember Ephesians 2 describing you when you were lost? This is God's, you know, commentary on you before you were saved. He said, where in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. Who's the prince of the power of the air? Satan. The devil. You know, the liar and murderer Jesus is talking about in John chapter 8. And I always think, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, we used to walk according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air. I think this world follows the course of the devil. You followed the world follows the devil.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm reading that right, that's what I think's going on. And so, you know, no wonder this world is just full of lies. And this, like I said, this is one example, and I bring it up because I know in the next few weeks, they're going to put it on the news, they're going to have it in the schools, it'll probably be in papers, and the whole thing's just a lie. But you're supposed to believe it, because, well, we believe it. It's a post-truth society we live in. And I show you just to say, again, it's good to have something you know is true. You ought to thank God, you know, God's given you a Bible, you really ought to thank God you have it. I mean, it's a big deal to have. You ought to cherish it and read it. Meditate on it, you know, memorize it, and you ought to teach it and put it out. And I'll close with this. This is my typical Martin Luther King verse. Look at Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23, verse 25. He says, I have heard what the prophets said. They prophesy lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed, I have dreamed. That's why I was thinking, Martin, I have a dream, right? He's saying, yeah, the prophet has a dream. How long shall this be in the heart of the prophets that prophesy lies? Yeah, they are prophets of the deceit of their own heart, which thing to cause my people to forget my name and their dreams, which they tell every man to his neighbor as their fathers have forgotten my name for Baal. The prophet hath a dream, let him tell a dream. And he that hath my word, let him speak my word faithfully. What is the chaff to the wheat, saith the Lord? So then he goes on, you know, is not my word like a fire? What does fire do to chaff? Burns it up. He says, you guys a dream? Let him tell a dream. There's evolutionists out there. Let him go ahead and, you know, fill in the blank. Secular human, whatever's out there, just let him say what they want to say. You know, let a dreamer, let him tell his dream. But he hath my word, what's he supposed to do? Let him tell my word. What's the wheat to the chaff? It's nothing. My word's like a fire. It burns it up. Like I said earlier, you know, the problem with the truth, it makes everything else look like a lie. But the problem is, though, man, you got lots of dreamers putting out lots of dreams. And who's got the Bible? Some people got it, but what are they doing with it? Nothing. You got the truth. Thank God you got the truth and get busy putting it out there. The world is full of lies and liars. Someone needs to have the truth and say, you know what, this is the truth and put it out there. I told you Romans 1, he says, right, look at Romans 1, we'll close with this. There I am lying. The people are prone to it. I said we close with that, we'll close with this. Romans 1, verse 18. He says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. You know, all the new Bibles change to suppress the truth because it makes all the apostate Christians feel better. Nobody's suppressing the truth. In the real Bible, it's talking about holding the truth in unrighteousness. I think that's most Christians you ever met. They got the truth. You know what they do with it? They hold it. They sit on it like a chicken trying to hatch an egg or something. Bury it like a dog in the yard, buries a bone, do nothing with it. And God says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. The liars in the world have no problem telling their lies just bigger and louder all the time. It should be more incentive for you to say, you know what, I got the truth, and I'm going to give it to you. Because somebody's got to give it to somebody. Someone gave it to you, right? You happy you have it? Give it to somebody else. And this thing will be dismissed in prayer. Well, amen. Lord, we do thank you for your goodness, and we thank you for blessing us and just giving us your truth and sanctifying us by your truth. And Lord, help us to love it. Meditate on it, like things we said, memorize it, you know, put it out there, teach it to our kids, give it to our neighbors, and just help us to, not to hold it like I think most of us have been for way too long. And so I said, help us go out and be faithful to you and just faithfully proclaim your word in Jesus' name. Amen.
So, everybody.